Hey, everybody, it's me, Dave Schrader, from the Paranormal 60, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, and the Holzer Files. And for some reason, you're tuned in to the Paranomaly Zone.
A ghostly apparition in the dark at night.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, that's hysteria!
So, Mike, I have a question for you.
Okay, I will try to answer it the best of my ability.
Okay, it's a deep one. It's a deep,
oh boy,
profound, thought-provoking...
Putting a bucket down the well, huh?
Kind of. A little
bit. All right.
I mean, when we were meeting up beforehand here to do our professional sound checks and whatnot, we included our usual banter, casual chat. At one point, you had said, I don't have any ponderables for this episode. Now, so that's fine. That's totally fine. So I thought I'd throw up my own to start this episode.
Awesome. I want to hear it.
It is related to Revenge of the Nerds, Part 2. Nerds in Paradise. Now, again, that was included in our brief casual conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But you had mentioned the classic character of Ogre.
Yes.
At one point in this classic 1987 phenom, that is Revenge of the Nerds Part 2, Nerds in Paradise, after discovering some, well, we'll just call bunches and bunches of nature's medicine on a deserted island in which they were, I guess, they resorted to this island because they were thrown off of a boat by the nasty Alpha Betas. They had nowhere else to go.
They don't quit, do they?
They do just not quit. They do not know how to spell quit. But after partaking in burning some of nature's medicine, they were all sitting around the campfire and throwing out brain teasers to each other because they're all brilliant, right? I mean, they're brilliant, but Ogre is included in this one because the Alpha Betas betrayed Ogre and tossed him overboard, I should say, as well. Now, Ogre came up with the classic question. Now, stop me if you know this, but I want your honest answer. Ogre asked, what if C-A-T really spelled dog?
Wow.
That's exactly how the nerds replied.
Yeah.
They thought about it in silence because they were really trying to answer it. And they said, wow, Ogre. Dog. So do you have an answer for that at all, Mike? Anything pop into your brain? What if C-A-T really spelled dog?
Well, okay, so my thoughts on this are if it was never referred to as cat and always referred to as dog, then it wouldn't matter because if somebody, you know, because that's just the way it's been. You know, dog is one of these furry little curtain-climbing, skin-shredding animals that we call a cat.
Oh, I see where you're going on that, with that.
Yeah, I probably didn't explain it very well. But
no, I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. It's when the name or the title, the description was bestowed upon members of the feline family and they were known as cat. What if back in the day, hundreds of thousands of years ago, they were simply referred to as a dog. I get that.
That could be possible.
But how about this? What if the way we pronounce letters was totally ass backwards as to what we know it today? Like when we look at the letters C-A-T, it's actually pronounced like D-O-G. You look at the C and you say, oh yeah, that's, how do you pronounce C? Well, you say D.
Okay, so from you know, how many generations back or since the beginning of time in this, you know, that includes this type of thing.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a mind bender, isn't it?
It's just we would have grown up the same, only the teaching from our first life or whatever would have to be totally different right from the beginning, and we would learn the alphabet that way. So
for a moment, I thought you were going to say our teaching from the great ogre.
So, oh, well, that as well.
I mean, that guy, he's philosophical, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Classic movie. So, if you haven't seen it, go check it out.
Yes. The late, great Donald Gibb.
He is not dead.
Yes, he is.
Donald Gibb is not dead.
Okay. Well, scratch that part then.
And he's not related to the Bee Gees either. So.
Exactly. Yeah. So. The alive and kicking Donald Gibb.
Donald Gibb. Although I have heard rumors that he did try out for the Bee Gees. But that, I could be totally wrong on that one.
Okay. Well, that's all right.
But it is good to see you, Mike. My goodness gracious, this has been a month of trials and tribulations when it comes to getting a goddamn podcast up and running. But yes, I said goddamn it. I apologize.
Okay.
I know that you are now a man of the Lord, so I apologize for offending you.
I can handle anything you throw out.
Okay. Yeah, it's been, man, I debated whether or not I wanted to vent for a while, but I was like, you know, people don't want to listen to that. They'd rather hear us go on for 5 minutes about ogre and cat and dog and all that stuff. So,
as far as we think.
Yeah, know, right.
We could be totally wrong.
And we probably are. We probably are. No, it's been maddening, Mike. It's been maddening. As you know, a few weeks back, I packed up the old mixer. I packed up the old mics. I packed up everything. Because it was time to move forward and, oh my gosh, purchase new equipment.
I thought it was going to be a life-changing experience, yeah, myself.
Like move out of the proverbial podcasting ice age, right? You know, I was going to move forward. I was going to be high tech. Well, long story short, it's been an utter failure. New audio interface, new, you know, slash mixer, new microphones. New software, conference software, all of the above, none of it worked. And I am about ready to throw everything podcast related that I own through every window in this house.
Well.
But I refrained from doing that.
Well, yeah, because for one thing, we wouldn't be able to do a podcast.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. Right.
And replacing those frickin' windows is not cheap.
No, it is not. No, windows are spendy. So, no, after packing away all of the quote-unquote old replaceable equipment, I dug them all out, and we're using the, well, I'm not going to call them tried and true and trustworthy as of yet, because...
old reliable.
Damn it. I didn't want to say that either, but...
I did. I said it. You don't have to worry.
And I'm using my previous laptop as well, the one that has been giving us awful internet connections. So far, knock on wood, so good. I probably just cursed that. But speaking of other laptops, I don't know what the hell I did. Hopefully, when I click on the old new laptop, I don't know if I told you this when I was texting you earlier. I had all this equipment hooked up, ready to go with the new laptop. Wasn't working. Nothing was working. I was like, okay, whatever, fine. I can deal with that. I'll just plug in the old laptop. Well, when I unplug the new laptop, I don't know what the hell happened. My computer started making the most god-awful, ear-piercing noise I've ever heard. I shut it off, turned it back on. It resumed that noise.
It was possessed.
And so I shut it off again, and I'm afraid to turn it on again later on tonight. I don't know what the hell. I don't know if I infected it somehow by plugging in my old mixer. I don't know if it, I don't know if it was just, I mean, it was a cheaper laptop. It's still nice. You know, it's good enough, but maybe I was overdoing it with the mixer plugged in and, you know, the monitor plugged in. Maybe it just overheated and it was throwing a fit, but it was not the fan noise that was going off. It was some weird crap. I've never heard that before.
Did you ever think there might be mice inside of it?
Oh my God.
Very tiny mice.
Very thin mice.
That have a loud squealing noise.
I tell you. Well, if I thought mice were residing inside that chair at the Sally house, I guess they can reside.
I'm not sitting in that chair. There's something in it. So I thought, okay, I put it back where it was originally. And I thought, well, I think I thought about sleeping in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then, you know. But then that couch, boy, sink in that like a bed of feathers. Oh,
man. Yeah, I was pretty impressed that you were able to get off of that couch, actually. So it was, yeah. You know, that was, I did sit on it briefly when I did that deprivation session myself. Yeah, it was comfy. It was a comfy old couch.
Yeah, and it was old. It was definitely retro.
Oh, definitely retro, and I know I'm repeating myself, but it was so comfy that Mike's snoring. Speaking about damaging windows, my God, those things were rattling because of Mr. Mike's powerful nasal passages. It was
I did that more when I was fat. Now I've lost a lot of weight, so I don't snore so much anymore.
I don't snore so much.
And Mary just laughed.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Mary. Okay.
Well, Mike, we've ranted and raved for about 11, 12 minutes now. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is, believe it or not, the Paranomaly Zone, the kind of mini return of the Paranomaly Zone, your weekly dose of, hey, all things, you guessed it, the paranormal, strange, and mysterious. My name is Patrick Kaufenberg, and I'm joined, as always, you heard him loud and clear, boys and girls, as always, by my co-host with the ghost, Paranormal Pulsar Boy himself. Yes, you heard it correctly as well. The man of God himself, Mr. Mike
okay.
Carbno. Should I start calling you Friar Carbno?
I think you're starting to giving me a hard time. I shall not be persecuted for my beliefs.
I want to see you dress up as Friar Tuck now. I just need to see that.
I will not have to be a martyr to this.
Deacon Carbno, Cardinal Carbno.
I'll tell you what. My dad had told me a story years ago that in the Catholic Church back in the medieval times.
Yes, easy for you to say.
We had relatives or ancestors that were cardinals in the Catholic Church.
Oh, no kidding. That's cool.
They were actually tax collectors as well.
My goodness.
And they were well off, I guess. I don't know.
Didn't the Beatles write a song about them? Tax man. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, okay. Sorry. I just killed all the momentum right there. I apologize.
Giving me crap about the Beatles, it puts me down. I did. But anyway,
How the hell is that giving you crap about the Beatles? It was a lame joke on my attempt. Because, you know, Taxman, the song, Taxman, hello?
Well, I know, but I felt like I had to get defensive for a second.
Yeah.
Because of your past rantings about the Beatles.
Hey, but that's on you, though. That's you. You're being Mr.
That is, yes, that is how I choose to respond to it. And I will not do it anymore, so.
Well, Mike, we do have a cool episode lined up. Hopefully, we got some great content for our Ghost Gab segment and Moments of the Macabre. We got some, definite grisly, ghostly Moments of the Macabre. It's going to be a good discussion for sure.
The Macabre.
But tonight's episode, yes, we are talking about ghostly tales. Ghostly tales.
And not the ones coming from your butt either.
No. Are we going to call it like hometown hauntings, Minnesota? I'll think of the title eventually. But yeah, we're talking about haunted Minnesota essentially. I mean, we are very, very personally close to Minnesota.
Oh, I love Minnesota.
I am a lifelong resident. Obviously, Mike has lived here. He lives very nearby in the wonderful metropolis known as Enderlin, North Dakota.
The metropolis.
But we got some pretty cool ghostly tales for sure. Talk about sound in Minnesota. I just said for sure.
Yeah, for sure, don't you know?
Oh, man. but it's going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to it. I'm already having a good time. Yeah.
You're babbling.
Well, I have to. You know why? Because I feel like I'm out of practice. I mean, it's been forever. I mean, we made a decision to limit our episodes to 2 a month and because we are increasing our Patreon episodes. Mike's covering his mouth because he doesn't want to laugh blatantly at me.
Blatantly. That's good use of the word blatantly.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. We are just flying off track.
That's fine. I don't care. That's what we're all about. I think it's been my fault mostly. No, you're just feeling down. You're feeling sorry for yourself. That's what that is.
No, I refuse to do that. I won't.
So, Mike, now it's time to put your thinking cap on, okay, for a little bit. We're going to open it up with some ghost gab.
Okay? My thinking scally.
Your thinking scally is on. Hopefully it isn't too tight where it's cutting off circulation.
Well, no, it's my brown denim cap. Yeah. I like it.
Okay, I could tell what color it was, but thank you for describing it.
Okay, anyway.
Haunted houses or haunted people, Mike. Perhaps it's a cliche discussion, but I think it's a good one. In your opinion, now let's just fire back and forth here. Haunted houses more prevalent, I should say, over haunted people? Do you think a haunted house depends on the people in the house? Are the people themselves the haunted objects? Or is it the house? I mean, I'm looking forward to talking about this because I know we have a lot of thoughts. But what's the first thing that pops in your brain when you think about haunted houses versus haunted people?
I say if the first thing that popped into my mind when you were listing those off was all of the above.
Yeah, I kind of figured you would. Well, elaborate. You know? Elaborate a little bit. Let's talk about this. I'm intrigued by your all of the above statement.
Yeah, give us each one individually, and we'll break it down.
Who's us? Is there other people there that I'm talking to besides you?
Oh, it only takes two to be an us.
Yeah, but you made it sound like break it down good for Lord. Us.
Why are you getting us off track again, Patrick? You know, I'm about ready to call you a dick. Get back on track.
I'm out of practice, okay? So I'm a little gabby.
But I think I've got you ahead by about five.
Maybe.
You know, going different directions to your one here. So
Maybe.
So anyway, yes. So do it.
Okay, Mike. There's a haunted house, okay? I'm setting up a scene for you. There's a family of four who live in that house. They start experiencing paranormal activity, stuff that is unexplainable. Do you think the percentage is higher that it is the family themselves that is causing this paranormal activity in some way, shape, or form? Or have they walked into an already, I guess, paranormally ordained abode?
Well, what I think of is that on the average, or you know, the higher percentage would be that they are walking into something that is already haunted, already has residuals that are going on for how many decades, you know, things like that.
Okay. Well, you mentioned residuals, but I'm assuming you also believe that there could be, even if the house is empty at the time, no residents inside of it, it could still be inhabited by intelligent hauntings.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Now what?
Absolutely.
Talk of stream of consciousness thought here. In an empty house, does an intelligent haunting, do they get bored? What are they doing? There's no one to interact with. I mean, or are they simply doing their thing in whatever realm they are in?
Yeah, well, you know, like the residuals, like we talked about, that would just be automatically happening and just, you know, playing that tape over and over again. But the intelligent hauntings are ghosts that, man, that's a good thought, good question. But
thank you.
I think maybe they go into some kind of a dormancy, and their activity really slows down when there's nobody there to maybe trigger something or to experience, or for the entity to have anybody in there to draw energy from.
Great points, Mike.
So
I like that.
That's a possibility.
I like that. I like that. You know, it's funny. Right before you said like a state of dormancy, that word popped in my brain. Dormant.
Okay.
So I don't know if we were both on the same
path
there of thought or train of thought.
Well, telepathically, I sent it to your right at your third eye. Oh, yes,
okay. So I thought I felt that one. I felt a
not little your one eye, your third eye, and that's as much of a penis joke as I'm going to go today.
Ah, you pissed off certain listeners right there. You just can't help yourself, can you?
Well, we're not going to dwell on it. So go on to the next.
I like that idea though of kind of going into a state of dormancy. You know, because there is no other. Well, I was going to say energy or entity, but there is no physical, as far as like humans being there, no physical thought, I guess. Nothing that's being generated by the living that they could interact with, respond to, or try to get their attention. You know, there's nothing there. So I get that. I like that idea. Why would they, like an intelligent haunting, why would it feel the need to rap on the door three times when no one's there to hear the door rapping?
Right.
Whereas as if it was still occurring, that would make you think that it's, like you said, residual.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I know we're repeating ourselves. Well, I'm repeating myself for sure. When I kind of get down in the weeds of thinking about residual hauntings, I get kind of bummed out. They kind of make me feel a little sad sometimes.
Yeah, well, why is that, Patrick? Let's break this down.
Well, we get it. They're not necessarily powered by an intelligence. Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they probably, perhaps, cannot experience sadness themselves. Is that too far of a stretch? So therefore, I should not feel bummed out. But sometimes I put it, that I visualize it too literally in my brain, where I think of a residual as being trapped almost. But if it was trapped, that would make you think of it being more so of an intelligent ghost that cannot escape.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going off on a pointless tangent here? You kind of get what I'm saying.
I kind of do, yeah.
Okay, thank you for saying kind of.
I couldn't go any further past kinda.
No, yeah, well, I don't blame you. So,
yeah.
Hopefully some of our listeners kind of get the vibe I'm trying to lay down there. I shouldn't feel bummed out because I don't think a residual has the emotions or doesn't have the capability of feeling emotion.
Exactly. That's what I believe, that residuals do not. I mean, they don't know. It's like how they always say, it's like a tape being played over and over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you feel sad for watching an 8mm movie? Do you feel sad for that film that's going through?
Yeah. No, I get you.
Or anything like that. You know, it's.
Well, so what about this? What about people who claim to see residual, like apparitions? You know, we're not just talking about, you know, audible noises. We're not talking about the simple replay of any number of things. But people actually can see. Like they see the same shadow figure walking down the steps the same time at night, all the time, over and over and over. No intelligence related to that residual energy either. That's just like kind of a physical imprint.
Right. If it's a residual, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So in my opinion.
Long story short, you definitely feel more so, you lean more towards haunted houses being the true, I don't want to say the true, being more likely as opposed to haunted people. But you're not saying that haunted people can't happen.
Exactly. I just think the majority would be the haunted location. Because I don't know. I just think it's more limited and rare than a person.
How do you explain someone like you then, Mike? You've lived in multiple locations, multiple houses, multiple spots around the world, and you, more often than not, have experienced something unexplainable, something paranormal. Is what's going on there? Have you just had awesome luck? Every place you've gone happens to have some sort of energy? Or is it you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or is it that I just have to have a good story from everywhere I've lived? Which is not true, because you know that when I've talked about all of my happenings, it's pure honest.
So what can you say, though? How can you answer that? I put you right on the spot on that one. Are you yourself a haunted person? Not in the negative connotation of the word haunted.
But right, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
Is the paranormal attracted to you no matter where you go?
Well, I think there can be, there's people that get, attachments, things like that, that might stay with you wherever you go. But I don't feel that that's what was going on with me. Maybe there is one that I'll say, but I'm not sure. But otherwise, I don't know. It's hard to describe. What? Give me another way to answer that. Like, give me another part of the question.
Give you another part of the question. Let me see.
Yes.
So you want me to rephrase the question?
Yeah, a little bit.
In
yeah.
other words, you want me to stall so you can regain your train of thought?
No, that's. I'm trying to do it as tactfully as I can, but it's not working one iota. I sit here dumbfounded, and I'm looking at you to see if I can have any support from just a look of pity on me or something.
it's all good. No, it's awesome. I could tell that you needed a little assistance there, and I'm here to help.
That wasn't a little assistance. You ratted me right the hell out. Oh, man.
Well, let's see here. So I have to replay it in my head here. I asked
see,
you,
don't
how
even
would
remember.
You, how would you describe your experiences? Would you call
That's
yourself
right.
a haunted person, and or are you just ridiculously lucky? And you
yep,
you kind of said, but then you started off, you said, well, some people may have paranormal attachments, and you said that, but there was like one experience, and then that's kind of when everything kind of started falling apart.
Falling apart.
Yeah, where you started
experiencing
yammering
things.
A bit. No. When you started, your train of thought went off the track.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. See, so, I'm confused still.
Okay, but anyway, moving on.
I was going to give you an answer.
Good.
Like I was saying, I think there might be one attachment, but I'm not sure. Like I said, but otherwise, I think it's me being sensitive enough to see these things, and other people around me or family. Maybe they weren't as sensitive, but they did experience some things, but they didn't actually see the girl that I did. So sensitivity maybe is something that I can pick up on different places, or, lucky, like you said, to be able to be in these places and experiencing the things that I did.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, talk about like all of the above. I mean, it could be a combination of all of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think we're open to the idea of those on the other side, Mike, the intelligent spirits. Wherever they are existing, they pick up on your sensitivity, and so therefore they want to reach out to you. And so maybe it's like you go into a house that perhaps there's a spirit or two residing in there. They're like, oh my God, thank God there's someone here who might actually notice us, because they can feel your sensitivity.
Maybe. And there'll be somebody along with that will see us, but they will never believe it, because that's the way Patrick is.
Whomever are you referring to? What? And that is a bold-faced lie. If I saw something, I'd believe it, baby. I'd believe it.
You'd rationalize it somehow.
it's just all every other thing that I sit there and frustrate the hell out of and myself, by the way. And myself.
I know you do.
Yeah, it's kind of a conundrum when you're a believer and you potentially experience stuff yourself, but then your dumb brain sits there and tries to convince you that you didn't. So that's why we talk about stuff like that on a podcast. That's why we've been doing that for over a decade now. Can you believe that? I still get blown away by how long we've been doing this.
Yeah.
But it's pretty awesome. Mike, before we take our first time traveling excursion here and we dive into our Minnesota hauntings, hometown hauntings, whatever the hell we're going to call it here, some ghostly tales that are going to be pretty cool, I think. I wanted to throw this idea out to you on air production meeting. We used to get, and for whatever reason, things have changed. It used to be, a few years ago, not easy. It was still a struggle, still took some work to land guests on this show.
Right.
And it's been really hard for, I mean, even the last, I don't know, three or four guests we've had within the last, like, year. It's been a while. I mean, those weren't easy to get. They weren't easy to set up. Granted, I haven't really reached out to hardly anybody. Are you still cool with having the occasional guest on the show, or do you want to just be me and you? What do you think about that on-air production meeting? Just because it is really, really hard. I don't know if there's been a lockdown on guests appearing on shows. it's been an adventure. I don't really want to give up on it, but I wanted your thoughts.
Right. And the thing is that, the people that we've had on the show, they've talked to these other people that we would potentially want to have on the show. And
that
maybe that
happened.
You've reached out to, but they have told them, do not go on this show.
Damn it.
It could be that word got out to us in the world of the paranormal.
You had to expose the truth, didn't you? You had to let the world know.
That's just a thought.
You had to let our tens and tens of listeners know.
No, I don't think that's a possibility. It's a possibility, but I don't think it happened. But
you never know. So just simply, you think we should still keep an open mind and keep
absolutely.
If the opportunity is there to have an awesome guest,
yep.
We'll still definitely do our best.
Yeah, I love having guests on, and I'm sure our listeners enjoy it too. I mean, then it's like, more of an interesting show, I'm sure.
Right. Actually, so they can listen to intelligent people for a little bit. Yeah.
Chip coffee's going to be on. Well, I got to set my timer for that day.
Again, I wish I was recording that on video. We could be staring up Chip Coffee's nostrils for about 50 minutes straight. So
that was, what a guy.
That was, yeah. That was awesome. I never had the heart to tell him that his camera was on.
Well, you can DM him or something.
No. By the way, that interview you did 6 years ago, that's 6 years ago. It was 2018 when he was on the show.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Crazy, crazy. Well, Mike, let's take a time traveling excursion. Let's clear our brains a wee bit and come back and talk some cool, creepy hometown haunting. Sound good?
Yes, just a wee bit of a brain drainage we'll have.
A brain drainage. Awesome.
Yes.
Sounds good. Well, hold on. Hold on, boys and girls. We shall be right back. And we have returned from yet another successful time traveling excursion. Mike, are you ready for some ghostly tales?
I don't know, but I'll do my best.
You don't know, but you'll do your best. Okay, way to grab the listener.
I don't want to get too scared with this stuff.
Oh no! Did you honestly say scared?
Scared?
You're not gonna get scared.
No, I won't. I know I won't. You know I won't.
No, not even close. You know, I was going through a lot of these earlier today. I mean, if you think about it for a while, yeah. I mean, they can be definitely creepy. But a lot of them are more like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, that's really neat.
Yeah.
And again, these are all from, these are all pulled from the book Ghostly Tales of Minnesota. I think I might just call the episode Ghostly Tales.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I mean, we were talking about ghostly stuff the first segment, so we'll just leave it at that. Should work.
Because you can't say... You really shouldn't say Ghostly Tales of Minnesota, because then you're just focusing on one and you're excluding every other state.
Exactly.
You know, and we don't want...
Yeah, someone from Michigan could be scrolling through their, their podcast list, and they'll say, well, screw them! I don't want to listen to crap about Minnesota! I totally get it. I get it.
But yeah.
Ghostly Tales. Again, I don't want this to be story time with Patrick, and I apologize for that. Hopefully my reading isn't too obnoxious, isn't too annoying, but we shall see. Maybe.
Mike's
biting his
tongue.
Mike's biting his bottom lip right now, going, oh, God.
In anticipation of what you're going to be reading in the dulcet voice of Patrick von Koffenberg.
I wish that was my real last name. It used
I
to
know.
Be. It used to be.
To me, you are a von Koffenberg.
Yes, I am too. I feel that way as well.
Okay.
This first one, okay. Mike, this first one is entitled Farewell from the Fog.
The Fog.
Farewell.
Great
from
movie, by the way.
The Fog.
Adrian Barbeau.
Thank you. And the story goes as such. Larry Rogers' maternal grandfather, John Telford, ran an oil distributorship. Distributorship.
If you got it.
Distributorship.
There you go.
Distributorship. Now, he lived in Pipestone most of his life in a big two-story house at the end of an alley until his death in 1957. Now, Larry Rogers' mother and several other of her siblings grew up in that same house, and Larry said that his grandpa, John Telford, had retired there. As the story goes, he added that grandpa couldn't walk real well anymore the last years of his life. He was seen walking down that alley many times, but always very, very slowly. Several nights after John's death, his widow was having trouble sleeping, which is very understandable. Very, very understandable. No matter how tired she was, she'd be up prowling around the house all hours of the night. She would call her daughter at any hour of the night to talk with her when sleep just could not come. Larry said, this is a quote, Grandma's house and my mother's were only a block apart, but for some reason, Mother hesitated to walk that alley that night. She preferred to talk with Grandma over the phone to try to calm her down. So even when Grandma called and asked her to come over, Mother usually stayed where she was. This went on for 3 weeks after Grandpa's death. Okay? Kind of setting up the story here a little bit. Larry goes on. He says, one night, Mother gave in and went over to Grandma's house. When she had walked down the alley about three-fourths of the way, she experienced a sudden haze or fog. She didn't think much about it, and she had just noticed it. There were a few other nights after that when she pleased Grandma by walking over to talk. On a couple of those nights, that same fog appeared. But while it seemed to be a few feet thick at first, it diminished each night. It got thinner and thinner each night, each time they'd encounter this fog. Still, Larry continues, the last night Mother walked down there to try to calm Grandma so they could both get to sleep again. She found that the fog was yet again there in the alley. The same alley that Grandpa had walked over and over and over.
Slowly.
Slowly, very slowly. It didn't prevent her from walking on, but this time it surprised her. She saw, and this is according to the story, she in fact saw Grandpa himself standing in the fog and waving to her. Larry continued, he said, Mother walked the rest of the way to Grandma's house, all the while running around and trying to decide what she really had actually seen. Kind of sounds like me. Like, what the hell did I just see? Did I just see Grandpa standing in that fog waving to me? Or am I like Patrick Koffenberg and I'm going to talk myself out of it?
Yeah.
Now, when she got to her grandma's house, she walked into the kitchen. There, she found Grandma sound asleep, finally, at the table, with her feet up on a chair, perfectly relaxed. That night marked the end of the nightly phone calls, the end to Mother's hesitant walks down the alley, and the end to Grandma's restlessness. From then on, she could sleep peacefully. It was as though John Telford himself said his last goodbye that night through the fog. No one, including Mother, ever experienced in the fog or never experienced the fog in the alley after that night.
Hmm.
Was it Grandpa's ghost that was in the fog, Mike?
Of course it was.
Think so?
He had that final thing that he needed to do before passing through the light.
Well, helping them because they were restless and they couldn't
sleep.
They were miserable.
That's right. Yeah. So he reached beyond the grave to help them and to give a proper goodbye.
Now, like I said, that wasn't creepy by any means, but I think a lot of these are like, they're just kind of cool tales, you know?
Yeah, very.
Do you think that that fog itself was paranormal in nature, Mike? Was it somehow, was that helping Grandpa conjure himself, or was the fog always him? You know what I mean?
It could be.
Because they didn't see him up until that very last night when they saw his image.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it had just been fog.
Well, the fog definitely had something to do with it. I think it was part of the paranormal package of this story, I think. And maybe this fog was actually not fog at all, but an opening portal from the other side or another dimension where the old man can come through.
I like that.
And before he was actually seen, it's like he was trying to get the simple message out, or trying to get the energy up enough to where he could actually pass through the portal and come through. But, you know, that's just a thought and a theory.
I like that thought, though. That's pretty interesting. See, I think that's a lot of my enjoyment, and I'm being totally sincere here, Mike. I'm not making a joke. I'm not doing anything of that nature. A lot of my personal enjoyment of doing this podcast is having these discussions with you, and I joke about putting you on the spot. But a lot of times, though, most of the times, you come up with great replies, great thoughts off the top of your head that really make me go, like, I really like that thought.
That. So, you say that often, and
I do.
I don't think you would say it unless you meant it.
My
dogs are going crazy.
Yeah, I know. That when I was sharing that story with you, Mike was distracted heavily, so I was concerned he wasn't hearing the story itself. But
well, I did miss a few parts, but I got the whole gist of it.
You got the gist of it.
Great story, though. But, you know, it's that perfect example of, you know, having that last visitation or last goodbye before the deceased family leaves.
And like you said, to help them rest themselves.
Yep, exactly.
To put them at ease. Now this one, Mike, this tale is entitled, and don't worry, the word distributorship is not in there anymore. I have a college degree, and you know, I'm going down the route of education as far as my vocation goes. So maybe future school children should be fearful of me and what I am about to bestow upon them with my inability to read sometimes.
Mm.
Did more than perfume rise from the manure pile?
Perfume rise from the manure pile?
And that's the title of this ghostly tale.
I hate manure. What movie was that from?
Back to the Future, my friend.
There you go.
I think that was part three, wasn't it?
I think they had it in each one where the biff of that age.
Oh, he did. He hit it in each movie, but I think it was part three where he said, "I hate manure." I think.
Maybe.
Because he like spit it out of his... No, wait. No, maybe it was part two. Maybe it was all three. You could be right.
Boy, you put enough energy into that. Let's move along here. But yes, you're correct, sir.
Yes, part two, he did scream, "I hate manure." And I think in part three, he mumbled it after he spit out the manure from his mouth.
Yeah, with that kind of southern accent.
Yeah.
"I hate manure."
Yeah. Well, Mike, did more than perfume rise from this manure pile? The story goes,
Let's find out.
This is a story from Ollie. Ollie told a story about something that happened more than 100 years ago. A century to you and me.
Ah.
Two elderly.
Thank you for that teaching.
Yes. Two elderly bachelors had lived on a farm southwest of Worthington. That's in Minnesota, everybody. About 11 miles from the Minnesota-Iowa border. Iowa, you $10. Others in the neighborhood of the farm knew that one day when the two were out pitching manure, they had a disagreement over something. It led to a big fight, a very bad fight. So bad, they say, that one of the bachelors killed the other and buried him right next to the manure pile.
That's bad to begin with. That's bringing up bad mojo off the bat.
That's kind of insult to injury, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Or insult to death. Man. Now, for nearly four decades after the incident, no matter who lived on the farm, people would see the quote-unquote dead man walking across the yard, just as plain as day. Ollie's own family lived on that farm years down the road. These are Ollie's words. When I was 16, me and my two younger sisters came home once at midnight. When we got into the yard, I said, "There's that man walking across the yard again." I ran into the house. This might be a little extreme reaction, but I ran into the house and got my 12-gauge shotgun, yeah, came out and shot that man at close range. The visitor simply vanished. Now, Ollie went on to get married. Years later, he often told this story. No matter how many times Ollie shared the story with his wife, Nellie, she never seemed to believe it had actually really happened. But in 1990, when Ollie told it all to a friend, Nellie finally spoke up. She said it had to be a ghost. If it had been a real man, he would have been blown to bits.
Yeah, and he would have been charged with murder.
Exactly.
Sheesh.
Instead, he just totally disappeared. Now, getting back to Ollie and his reaction.
Yeah. Well, first thing I want to know is why these kids at this age were out that late.
I know. That's, naughty, naughty, naughty.
That's ridiculous. But anyway,
16 years old, and he reacts by grabbing a 12-gauge and running up to this person and trying to blow him away. Well, who knows?
Okay.
To each his own, I guess. Ollie then said, "I never saw the ghost after that, but a few years after we were married, Nellie was bathing the youngsters in the dining room part of the house. We had a tub we could put in there, and it was a little warmer and more private than in the kitchen. I remember it was winter when this happened because it was getting dark fairly early." Now he goes on, he says, "While the kids splashed around in the tub, Nellie looked out the window toward the other house on our property. She saw a man go across the yard and up to the tenant house. But she thought nothing of it. She simply thought it was a man who was walking across the yard to get to the other tenant house that was on their lot, I should say." Did you catch that, Mike? I know you were yelling ferociously.
I was yelling at the dog. Repeat that.
Well, Nellie, while they were bathing the kids, she says that later on, one night, years down the road, she was looking out the window and she saw, looking out the window toward the other house that was on their lot. And she said she saw a man go across her yard and up to the tenant house and enter that house, the tenant house, another house that's on their yard. She finished bathing the children, helped them get into their nightshirts. The next day, though, she thought of it again when she was visiting with Hattie, the lady who lived in this tenant house. So she walked over to the Hattie's house and said, "I see you had company last night." Of course, Hattie, without hesitation, simply replied, "No, no one stopped by last night." But to this day, Nellie is sure she saw a man not only walk across her yard, but go into that tenant house. Was it a ghost of the man who was buried beside the manure pile, Mike?
That's very possible.
The same one that the guy tried to kill with a 12-gauge shotgun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, chances are that's who it would have been. I mean.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's kind of interesting. This one, Mike, is entitled A Prophetic Passenger.
Okay.
That's a lot of P's. I'm sorry if I'm popping my P's, everybody.
The Prosthesis Passenger.
Yes.
Posthumous. What you said.
Can I go on?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I'm waiting.
Ever so patiently?
I'm trying to do that the best I can, but it's not working. Read!
Okay. Oh, this is another person. No, this is Nettie. This isn't Ellie. This is about a gal involved named Nettie. About 10 years have passed since Nettie told this story at a Bible study class. She told the group, "You know, my daughter is attending Mankato State. A few weeks ago, she and two other girls were coming home to Worthington for the weekend. Kim, who was driving, made it a practice not to pick up a hitchhiker. Very wise choice, I might say myself. This time, though, she did because the man was wearing a suit and looked exceptionally great. The girls were all riding in front, so he got in the back. So there's a bunch of girls. They decide to pick up this nice-looking hitchhiker. It kind of sounds like Ted Bundy to me.
Yeah, it's the first thing that popped through my head.
Man. Everyone felt awkward at first. No one said anything. It was pretty quiet in the car. But then, as they drove along, the back seat passenger said, "Jesus is coming soon." That's kind of random, kind of odd. The first words that this stranger says is, "Jesus is coming soon." Now, the girls didn't know what to say, so they just sat there, and Kim kept on driving. A while later, one of the girls thought of something she could say to this stranger. She turned to speak, but there was no one there.
Of course.
No one was there. They hadn't stopped the car. They couldn't figure out how he had got out. Kim drove on until they got to a gas station. All three were shaken by what had happened. I don't blame them.
Oh, I think it would have been awesome.
They were ready to stop and tell someone about it. They told their story to the attendant at the gas station, hoping he could help them make sense out of it. When they had finished, he said, "You are the 17th car that has stopped and told me that same story." Much later, Nettie told the story a second time to another group gathered for a Bible story. She finished with, "You know, when I was told this story the first time, no one said anything of it for a while. Now I'm asking you, what do you make of it?" After some thought, a gal named Louise.
Louise?
I called him Louie. Louise is a distributor.
Patrick's voice is changing finally.
Well, Louise ventured, "Well, if he didn't actually get out, but he wasn't there anymore when she turned around," Henrietta interrupted. "He must have been a spirit." Henrietta is another gal in the Bible school, Bible study. "We've just been talking about spirits and good angels and things like that." "That's exactly what I was thinking," Nettie said. "He or whatever, whoever, must have been one of God's guardian angels keeping watch over the girls. Keeping watch over them and 16 other cars full of people traveling home. To them, that's the only explanation there could be. How else could he get in and out of all those cars?" Now, others have gone on and heard about or experienced something similar and shared their stories. And in each case, the hitchhiker was wearing the same suit, gave a message of comfort or hope before he disappeared mysteriously from the moving vehicle. So this continues to happen, apparently, on
occasion.
I'm sure
it does.
Is this a ghostly prophet, Mike, who wanders the streets? The highway, I should say, the freeway?
Yeah. But wasn't little Nettie, wasn't that a character on The Three Amigos? Any, I think.
Wasn't that Ned?
Well, yeah, but I think somebody, one of them called him Little Nettie.
Wasn't it like Ned Niederlander or something like that?
Yeah. Is that Martin Short's part?
That was Martin Short. It was Ned Niederlander or something.
Yes.
Like something similar. I don't know. No. I'll just say no.
Anyway, the ghost story is awesome. I think
I love that story.
I do, too. I think the spirit or the ghost or angel or whatever you want to call it, it's probably the suit that he was buried in, you know, some kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has a mission still, or maybe he was sent as a mission for a mission. Kind of like, maybe like Highway to Heaven, but just a lot smaller messages, you know, like.
Did I tell you?
You know what I mean?
Did I happen to tell you about that ghost story that I heard from the late, great Telly Savalas, of all people?
No. Who loves you, baby?
Good old Telly Savalas. If you don't know that name, just look it up and you'll immediately recognize the guy, even if you were a youngster, probably. Maybe you won't. I don't know.
Kojak. Always had a lollipop in his mouth, a little sucker, like with the little dum-dums or whatever.
I remember him as the psycho maggot in The Dirty Dozen. I remember that's like an awesome
movie. He was a hell of an actor.
But very, very briefly, I saw, like, it was from a 1980s or 1990s television program about the paranormal activity, and he was one of the guests who was talking about stuff he had experienced. I'll be as brief as possible, but he experienced something similar. His car, like, ran out of gas, He was picked up by a stranger who was kind enough to take him to a gas station and filled up his tank, brought him back, and Telly asked for his name and his number so he could call him and pay him back when he had a chance. He got his name, got his number. The very next day, he called the number and the name, and he asked for this gentleman. And the woman who answered immediately got angry and said, "Who are you? This is cruel. That was my husband. He passed away 5 years ago."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of, and you know, describing the physical appearance was like a perfect match. I mean, it wasn't someone who was impersonating this guy. It was kind of crazy, kind of neat. I like this. Mm-hmm. I love hearing stories like that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, guardian angel type stuff, you know, that there's always somebody there watching over you or whatever. But also these two stories, when you hear them, especially, you know, when you hear, you know, like they're being read to you, it just, to me, I got such a strong feeling of, you know, there's all these, you know, everywhere in the country, each state has their legends and their scary stories that they tell it, you know, at the campfire at night or, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, could that be something like that? Like a lot like the, Resurrection Mary story, you know, that's kind of the same thing. But did they happen, or are they just, you know, like
kind of embellished
fairy tales?
Yeah, embellished over the generations, over the decades,
right? Maybe. But you know,
I like to believe that they're legit, you know. So I would hope so.
That saw the man in the suit.
I'm sorry, what was that, Mike? You said something about the man in the suit. We had our first internet connection problem. So
I saw that. Yeah, you know, there's so many people that describe that had seen them. But are these people around, or is it somebody that's telling a tale of all of these cars? And you know,
I see.
It could be something like that, or you know, obviously it could be real
legit,
and still happening to this day.
Real legit paranormal experience.
Yeah, I would like to believe that.
No, same here. Absolutely. Well, this one, Mike.
Filling him.
Yeah, sorry. Of course, we can't have a night without internet connection. So are you back? Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Good. This tale is simply titled A Warm Spot.
Ah.
Now, we hear about people explaining their ghostly experiences, and they talk about oftentimes feeling a cold spot, you know.
No, we're still.
What?
Hello.
Hello, Mike.
Hello.
We're sorry, everybody.
Hello.
I know.
Lady.
Things have been going too well, you know, when we get into the ghostly stuff, of course, the connection starts.
Just read fast between internet interruptions.
I will. All right. Now. This is called The Warm Spot. As I mentioned, this tale is called The Warm Spot, I should say. Instead of experiencing your paranormal cold spots, this human experience odd warm spots. Now, it's no surprise to those who have read books about ghosts that cold spots are believed to be the spot where the spirit enters or leaves. Now, Holly and her husband believe they had a ghost. Neither of them ever saw it, but they felt that where it had stood, unlike others, it left a warm place. This happened at least six or several times a week. I'm sorry, I'm being distracted because Mike and I are just totally freezing up over and over, so it's just lovely. Are you there, my friend?
I am here now.
Did you hear any of what I read?
Bits and pieces.
Okay. Well, this couple thinks their house is haunted because they keep finding warm spots, unexplained warm spots. Warm places, I should say. Now, Holly described their home as an old two-story house south of Atwater. Their upstairs bedroom had linoleum on the floor. They go on to say, that's probably why we could feel the difference in temperatures so easily. The room had only a small water heater, so the linoleum floor was always cold. One night, Holly continued, as I got ready for bed, I felt a warm place beneath my bare feet. I moved around it to check it out. It was round, about the size of a large dinner plate, a very large dinner plate on the floor, leaving a warm spot. Try and visualize that. Again, they tried to rationalize what could be causing this. Could it be caused by their own little small house dog? But they talked themselves out of that because the dog never ever laid down on the cold linoleum. Dog was always on the bed, on the girl's bed, or in his room, or was in the closet. Now this dog hangs out in the closet? Okay. Mike's like, Quite a while later, the warm spot appeared yet again. From the location of the spots, it seemed that the ghost preferred our bedroom and had hovered around either by the side of, or the foot of our bed, except once when the door stood wide open. Then the warm spot was behind the open door. These inexplicable warm spots on their floor, Mike, it was moving around.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to check it out. They tried to rationalize. They crouched down, tried to feel the spot with their bare hands. It never worked. They could only feel it with their bare feet. It was always a very different warm, round area, always the same size. She asked her husband, Lee, if he had just been standing there, but of course he hadn't. Second time they felt it, we were worried about a fire. But there was no short in the wiring below the floor. We wondered if there was actually an animal's nest between the floor and the ceiling. And they were actually feeling the animal's body heat. Never heard anything, though. And later, when they tore the old house down to rebuild a new one, the original wiring was just fine and no signs of any nests. When they reflected on it, both Holly and Lee realized they had felt the warm spots only in the evenings. Now they live in a new home with carpeted floors and ceiling heat, but they haven't felt any warm spots. However, one unexplainable thing does happen in the new house. They'll be sitting in the dining room when all of a sudden Lee's guitar will twang on its own in the middle of the living room and only in the evenings. So they're wondering that apparently Mike likes the word twang.
It got a little bit of twang.
But they're wondering if now, since the new house has carpet, and the entity or the spirit, the ghost, can't kind of signify its presence by leaving these warm spots on the carpeted floor. Now it's starting to twang on Lee's guitar. What do you think about that, Mike?
Maybe. Got a little bit of twang.
I knew that's all he was going to say. I knew that's all you were going to say.
Well, you know me. It's the first thing that popped into my head.
Well, Mike,
I don't know. Are they related, you know, the twanging guitar? Or it sounds like two separate things altogether.
But they happened, you know, now that the carpet was laid in the new house, they don't notice the cold spots. And since that happened, now all of a sudden his guitar is being twanged. So it makes you wonder. Is that like going, dang it, how am I going to get these guys' attention now? Oh, I'll twang
exactly.
His guitar.
Well, yeah, and using what's available.
Yeah.
You know, most easily available.
Hey, you just said easiestly, so there you go.
Hey, you know me and making up words.
Well, Micah, time for a time-traveling excursion, and it couldn't come at a better time because our connection is god-awful right now. So,
god-awful.
We shall return. I have a couple other brief tales, and then we're going to talk about some moments of the macabre, some potential ghost deaths or deaths caused by ghosts. So hang in there, boys and girls. We shall return. Mike, don't go anywhere, okay? I'll send you another invite, and we'll wrap up this rip-roaring episode. How's that sound?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Hold on, boys and girls. We shall be right back. And we have returned again from yet another successful time-traveling excursion. Mike, let's end this on a high note, hopefully, huh? Maybe?
A high note.
A high note. Got another tale or two for you before we wrap it up with moments of the macabre. Sound good?
This hasn't been very macabre, though. It's been just kind of pleasant stories.
Yeah, I know, but I have the moments of the macabre lined up. Remember?
Oh that's right. We aren't doing the macabre yet.
No, we aren't in the macabre.
Yeah. Ghost gab. We're not doing ghost gab right now.
No, we did right? Ghost gab the first segment of the show. Where is Mike right now? Are you in your own...
I'm in some kind of a delusional state.
Your own mental abode.
I know where we're at, and I know where we're going, so keep going.
Okay.
I'm trying... I'm trying to refrain from saying carry on.
My wayward son. Well, thanks.
There you go.
You just did it. This tale, Mike, is referred to as the Hanged Man.
Hanged Man.
Starts off as such. Guilty. That one little word, that one little word sealed John Moshick's fate. He had been accused of shooting another man in the back, murdering him during a robbery that netted Moshick a watch and $14.
Oh, my word.
The facts of the case were indisputable. His trial in Minneapolis City Hall's Chapel Courtroom proved it. But Moshick hoped his plea of inherited insanity,
oh, yeah,
might allow him to escape death. It did not. Moshick's verdict meant the end of his life. At 3:35 a.m. on March 18th, 1898, Moshick was hanged in the attic level of City Hall's South Tower. Now, why do they do that at 3:35 in the morning? I mean, just are they on that weird of a schedule? Is that just to add insult to injury? I mean, I guess I don't know what's going on there.
But I don't know. They probably do it when there's not a lot of people.
Well, there
around.
You go. That's true. That's probably a wise decision, yeah.
And it's the paranormal hour, you know, in that,
that's
that time frame.
Well. That's very
I'm sure they didn't think of that before doing it, but it just makes it a more interesting story.
It does. It does. Now, unfortunately, it was a very gruesome scene as Moshick's death was not quick. His hanging was botched. The convicted murderer hung, squirming and writhing at the end of the noose, his arms and legs bound for more than 3 minutes.
Wow.
Before death finally came.
I bet he was flopping around like you first put a worm on a hook.
Yes.
I don't know.
The Moshick worm. Yes.
Yeah, the Moshick worm.
Now, almost immediately thereafter, rumors began to swirl. Many believed the torture that Moshick endured unleashed his spirit upon City Hall. Perhaps there is some truth behind this gossip. From custodians to visitors to lawyers and even judges, nearly everyone who entered the castle-like building seemed affected by paranormal phenomena. Claims such as, "I was chased by eerie footsteps," and "I saw a ghost" were heard countless times over the next several decades. The chapel courtroom gained such a haunted reputation that during a 1950s renovation project, it was removed from the plans. However, that didn't deter City Hall's specter in the least, the Moshick specter. The South Tower, where John Moshick had been executed, became known for its ghostly sightings and for the inexplicable sounds of flushing toilets. The mayor's adjacent office was also a prime target of the Hanged Man's ghost. Time and again, the artwork inside was rearranged. Not just taken down, but actually shuffled to different spots. And again, if that wasn't enough, there were the all-too-common fifth-floor occurrences. Most heavily concentrated near the stairwell, the locked stairwell that led to the South Tower. One inmate declared, "I'm telling you, I saw it." Under different circumstances, yet, Deputy Rex Stevens would have ignored the complaint.
Rex Stevens?
What's wrong with the name Rex? Good golly.
Sounds like some kind of a, I don't know, a leading man in a really bad movie. I'm Rex. Whatever it was, but
Rex Stevens, I think, is what you're trying to say.
Rex Stevens, yes, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I think it sounds like he worked alongside John Holmes and stuff like that. I get what you're saying.
Jeez.
Now
that was uncalled for, but go ahead.
Now, Deputy Rex Stevens would have not, normally ignored the complaint of the inmate yelling, "I'm telling you, I saw it," but he'd been working at the Hennepin County Adult Detention Center on the fifth floor of Minneapolis City Hall long enough to know better. "There was a man wearing boxer shorts and nothing else," the inmate continued.
Jeez.
Man, Mike is finding humor in everything here. I love it. "I was in the common room and he stared at me through the window. Only he didn't look so much like a man. He was gray and faded. He looked like a ghost." This is what the inmate was saying.
In boxer shorts.
In boxer shorts.
And he probably winked at him as well,
probably,
right?
Well, in his dreams, maybe.
Wow. This is amazing.
Deputy Stevens nodded in agreement. He knew the rumors about this place, and he'd heard the stories. He'd even walked through a few occult spots and glimpsed an occasional spooky shadow himself. But to actually see the dead eyes of a phantom, it was almost unbelievable. Almost.
Almost.
The problem was that Deputy Stevens had already heard this account 5 different times from 5 different inmates. And whenever that many sources told the same tale, believable or otherwise, well, guess what? It's worth checking out. But how does one investigate such a thing, Mike? The video monitors were a first logical step. They yielded no visual evidence. Did that disprove the ghost stories? Not to Deputy Stevens' satisfaction. Of course, as he admitted to himself, ghostly tales weren't generally the sort of thing one proved or disproved. Yeah, we know that all too well.
Very.
People either believed them or they didn't. Strangely, though, while the deputy considered himself something of a skeptic, he couldn't bring himself to categorize the spirit of John Moshek as nonsense. His instincts told him something supernatural was indeed happening, and his instincts proved to be right. As Deputy Stevens hurried down the corridor, he walked 3 spots so cold that it caused him to stop and shiver. He spun on his heels, turning back toward the temperature anomaly. For the briefest of instants, he saw a gray, faded man wearing nothing more than boxer shorts.
Where does the boxer shorts thing come in? That's just too, that makes it very bizarre.
Was the guy hung in nothing but boxer shorts?
I wonder.
Did boxer shorts exist in 1898?
Oh, I'm sure there is some form of them.
Some form of them, of course.
Made out of corn husks and stuff like that.
And, of course, as quickly as the apparition appeared, the specter vanished. So, say what you will, Mike. Is that the hanged goat? The hanged ghost. Is that the ghost of hangman John Moshek? I mean, he hung there for 3 flipping minutes. Before finally perishing.
That's horrible.
I cannot imagine, no matter how egregious and awful his felonies may have been, I can't imagine he's a happy spirit after suffering.
Right, and that's going to cause a lot of negative energy that's going to hang around, I think. You know.
Yeah.
But you know, it could be a totally separate entity, you know, if they actually seen them, this Moshek, and identified it as Moshek?
Yeah.
Or are they just, you know, figuring that this gray blob that they see wearing boxer shorts?
Gray blob wearing boxer shorts.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like me, like 90 pounds ago.
Oh, hey, come on now. Stop.
Anyway, go ahead. Gray glob wearing boxer shorts.
Well, I'll share one more before we move on to the moments of the macabre, some tales of potential deaths caused by ghosts. I mean, my goodness, that's terrifying enough as it is. I mean, ghosts can be terrifying enough as it is, but to perhaps cause someone's death? Ooh, I don't know, man.
Say that again?
This one is entitled Fertile Soil for Ghost Stories.
Fertile soil.
I'll fly through this in a little bit here. A young woman working at KWOA, a radio station west of Worthington. There's Worthington again. Man, this Worthington has been mentioned several times. Working around Halloween, had heard of a ghost in the Lamberton area. Of course, that led to a ghost story hunt. Lamberton wasn't hard to find. It's between Walnut Grove. Oh, Walnut Grove! And New Ulm on Highway 14. Oh.
Down by Mankato.
Down by Sleepy Eye and Paw Ingalls residence. It's a very historical area, I should say. There it goes. One can visit the place where Laura Ingalls Wilder once lived. There's also the McCone Sod House, a reconstructed pioneer home of the 1880s. I mean, so it's a historical little area. There's also the Lower Sioux Indian Reservation and related sites near Redwood Falls. I'm sorry, Mike, you were saying?
I was just saying it reminds me of when you and I were out at Bonanzaville in Fargo, North Dakota.
I would love to go. By the way, I did see that your friend Audrey Farrell and her ghost hunting group has been granted some overnight investigation time at Bonanzaville, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, I saw that you posted that.
That would be so great to go with them on a hunt.
I would love to have access to that. After hours.
Absolutely. Damn. We still need to have her on the show, by the way.
Hey, yeah, speaking of guests, there you go.
Yes.
The story told around Lamberton has to do with a grave on top of a hill just outside of the town. It is said that a young girl of about 12 years old was buried alive in that grave on the hill, and that her ghost has been seen since then. If she was buried alive, one can conclude that her spirit is not at peace. Yeah, no shite. Some folks claim to have seen her wandering alone on the hill at night. Others say that they have heard her moan and whimper as she hovers around her grave. There seems to be some agreement as to the spirit being that of a young girl, although some say she hovers and others say she can only be heard and never seen. So that's interesting. Two different type of phenomena people are experiencing that could possibly be from the same source.
Exactly.
Some see the hovering energy. Some just simply hear, audible. I say audible. They hear it, the moans, the whimpers, the sighs, the cries. Oh, I don't like it.
Yes.
Now, another Lamberton area story revolves around three American Indian women who were buried on a hill on land that had been farmed over for years. Those who pass over that spot as they work the soil think about the three women and wonder if their spirits roam there. The three maidens, as they have become to be known as a familiar symbol and sight in the American Indian culture, especially in legends of nearby Pipestone. So it's something, some food for thought there. Something to ponder. There's also once a city of Sanborn Cemetery. So it was no surprise that the tales abound. There was a time when all the graves were moved to the new Sanborn City Cemetery. Oh, God, moving all those graves, man.
Yeah.
You're asking for trouble.
Absolutely.
You only move the headstones.
That's what I was thinking that too, yeah. Skeletons coming up from the...
Oh, man.
It wasn't nasty.
So, while all the graves were moved, but for some reason, one marker was left behind. That marker, roughly 3 feet high and 2 feet wide and made of iron...
Really?
...was close to the line that separated these two farms. After being shifted from one side of the fence to the other in the regular routine of farming near it, it was finally placed on the exact fence line. When Sanborn celebrated its centennial, the facts about the old and new cemeteries were published. The articles told that one remaining marker had not been moved with the others. Perhaps that would have been better left unsaid, for it drew attention to the site of the old cemetery and the one remaining marker, which, of course, were promptly stolen from its place and were never returned.
Mm-hmm.
One person commented that the old cemetery land would never be farmed because the area is rocky and full of holes where the old graves were, and the holes were grown full of weeds. Nor would it be good for exploring because one could fall into an empty grave. But it sounds like a good place for ghosts to haunt. Ghosts of young girls, ghosts of American Indian women, or whomever. Is it indeed a fertile ground, Mike? Is it fertile soil for ghosts? The idea of relocating cemeteries, the idea of someone being buried alive, a horrific death for a 12-year-old girl, for anyone, but a 12-year-old girl buried alive?
How did they find that out?
Talk about, that's a good question. Very good question. I'm sure the researcher, the author of the book, found out, but, he's keeping it short and concise for the readers.
Mm-hmm.
As we often encourage our listeners to do your own research. I mean, we just kind of share these stories and hopefully emphasize the interest in them. But this is definitely a case, Mike. Again, we talked about earlier, beginning of the episode, are houses haunted? Are people haunted? This is definitely something about perhaps people creating unwanted paranormal activity by such actions as burying someone alive, desecrating cemeteries, relocating cemeteries, any number of things. I think you're open-minded to that idea, Mike, about humans perhaps conjuring up some activity that otherwise may not have occurred.
Absolutely. You know, it's like the cause and effect kind of thing. You know, I don't know.
Well, sure.
And there goes my dog.
Your dogs have their thoughts too, apparently. They're trying to cause and effect Mike to... Well, no, I was going to say they're going to cause Mike to erupt in anger, and the effect was him to drop dead from a burst artery. No, I'm kidding. Of course I'm kidding. That's awful. I'm just talking to kill some time because Mike's yelling at his dogs, and he's back.
And I bled out in 2 minutes.
I know. I'm sorry. It was an awful joke. Awful joke. Awful joke. Bad taste. Poor taste. I take it back.
That's okay.
I take it back. That'd be awful. But as we kind of jokingly referred to, you know, the scene in Poltergeist where Craig T. Nelson's character is like, when you only move the headstones, man, you're angering a lot of spirits who otherwise may have been at peace if we would have got our dirty, grubby fingers on them.
But, you know, is their peace really disturbed? I mean, it's their shell that's left without the spirit. But
yeah, that's a good...
If the energy or the spirit knows about this desecration, you know, that could cause some ill feelings amongst the dead.
100% it could, man.
Yeah, so.
Well, Mike, you know, to wrap it up here, moments of the macabre, some potential, more grisly, potentially, how do I want to word this? Okay, we'll back up. Grisly, ghostly deaths, as in, were these deaths caused by the paranormal?
Yes.
And I won't bore everyone's time here. Bore everyone's time. Good golly, Miss Maury. Miss Maury, I can't speak anymore.
Boy, you need some remedial speech.
I get flustered sometimes. I apologize. I read too much, and then I get worried that I'm reading too much, and then I'm like, I'm not going to read anymore, and then I can't speak, and then yeah.
You can fix that by doing certain exercises with your vocal cords and the movement of your mouth.
Oh.
And the placement of your tongue behind
the top sick. Of your mouth. That sounds sick and perverted. I don't know where you're going with that one.
It's just explaining how talking is done.
So one of the... Thank you. Thanks, genius. That's awesome. Now, this first one, Mike, is simply referring to the supposed curse of King Tut. Now,
okay,
a lot of deaths have been related to, well, supposedly related to, those who have come in contact to, or not even come in contact to, come near the tomb of one King Tut.
King Tutankhamun.
It's kind of crazy, Mike, of all this stuff that is it all coincidental? Some of these examples of people who have passed away, members of the excavation team, one gentleman named Arthur Mace, killed by arsenic in 1928. Richard Bethel, Howard Carter's secretary, who allegedly smothered to death in his sleep. Smothered to death in his sleep. Good God.
His pillow was too big.
Extremely heavy. Sir Archibald Douglas Reed. He was responsible for X-raying the Pharaoh's mummy. He was the victim of a mysterious death. I mean, the list goes on and on. People who have come in contact in however way with the tomb of King Tut. Have they been cursed, Mike? Has this, you know, discovery, the removal of this sacred site affected those? Do you believe in a ghostly death attributed to curses?
There might be something to it, I believe. It goes back to, I don't remember the name of the guy that discovered it and everything. Back in the early 30s, was it, I believe? I can't remember. But is it all coincidental? or is it it's just too much, too many things to, for it to be coincidental?
Early 1920s.
Okay, 1920s.
Pharaoh Tutankhamun's tomb was discovered by British archaeologist Howard Carter.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Oh, so, you didn't know that off the top of your head.
I did not. Okay. No, I didn't. Did not.
But I'm sorry. I wanted to answer that for you. So, do you buy into curses? Do you buy into curses like that, though?
Not so much.
Not so much.
You know, okay. I think of things like that where people are convinced that they're cursed or that there's a curse or, you know, and it gets built up in their mind and causes them problems. You know, that's a possibility.
Definitely. I believe we did The Haunting of Alcatraz as an episode a while back.
Yeah.
I might be repeating myself here, but this is an example of the supposed Alcatraz's whole ghost.
Not half. It's all there.
There isn't the W. It's H-O-L-E, as in a hole.
Yeah.
I fell into a hole.
I got it. I knew that.
Now, during the 1940s, there were many reports of a ghostly man wearing late 19th century prison garb patrolling the hole. And we all know what the hole is in prison terms. Okay, it's solitary confinement.
Yes.
Sometimes in the most atrocious conditions.
It's a dungeon-like existence.
However, this apparition may have been responsible for a suspicious death of a fellow prisoner. It goes on to say that shortly after being locked in the hole, this inmate began screaming that there was somebody with glowing eyes trapped in the hole with him. The guards simply ignored him as he screamed long into the night before an eerie silence fell. The next day, the guards discovered that the convict had been strangled to death.
Oh.
The handprints on his throat, livid and fresh. Some simply say that one of the guards finally snapped and took the ultimate step to shut the man up.
Shut up!
However, a thorough investigation into this possibility turned up no evidence. So it makes one wonder, did a 19th century prisoner who wandered the jail's corridors commit the crime from beyond the grave?
Or did he strangle himself to death?
Was he going insane and he somehow strangled himself? Is that physically possible? Can you do that?
Oh, man.
Would your instincts allow you to do that?
That's what I would wonder, you know, and it could come down to instincts unless...
Your instinctive desire to live.
Yes, that survival. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it'd be very likely that he strangled himself.
I think it'd be more likely it was a damn ghost strangling him than himself.
Oh, sure. Exactly. Especially with the glowing eyes.
The glowing eyes, and he immediately started screaming that he saw this.
Until the uncomfortable silence.
Yeah. And again, this is 1940s. Just because no evidence popped up doesn't mean that the guards were all in cahoots and then said, like, you know, Bob, can you go shut this guy up, please? Okay, Bob. And he got.
Oh, they probably drew straws and everything.
Right. I don't know. I don't know. I think it's creepy as hell. I'm not saying it wasn't paranormal in nature for sure. It definitely could be a potential macabre moment of a paranormal grisly death. Ugh.
Well, at the very least, it's a very mysterious story. Very
100%.
Very intriguing. I mean, it's you know, even just the thought of it being a possibility
is cool.
You know, it's all good. Yeah.
Now this one, Mike, is known as this story is called the Thai Widow Ghost.
The Thai Widow Ghost.
2013, villagers living in Tambon Ta Sawang. I was going to say Sawang, but I knew you'd probably laugh.
See, I did anyway, so you might as well just said it. But anyway, go ahead.
I'm just going to call it TTS.
TTS.
Villagers living in TTS in Thailand were terrorized by the ghost of a widow who was believed to have killed 10 men in the space of a single month.
Mm. widow or the ghost?
They were terrorized by the ghost of a widow. The widow was believed to have killed 10 men.
Okay, got it.
You got it?
Yeah. I got it. It makes me laugh.
All of the men had died under mysterious circumstances, some while sleeping and others apparently dropping dead while walking around.
I'm sorry, but this is hilarious.
All had been declared by doctors to have died of respiratory failure.
And then they were buried alive.
Yeah, right, exactly. Since none of the men had shown any signs of being ill, the villagers hired a spirit medium who blamed a widow ghost for the deaths. The medium then recommended that each resident hang red shirts outside their houses so that the spirit would be repelled, especially those who only had a single son, since they were most at risk of a ghostly visit. And that single son had to only have one pair of shoes, one with Velcro, the other with strings, and he also had to have a cartoon tattoo drawn on his forehead of Mickey Mouse. I added that part on there.
I lost you.
It was just getting really back. Really specific here. It's like it has to be a red flag, and you have to have only one son in order for this to work. So if you have two kids, a red flag isn't going to repel this ghost. Or if you have no kids,
well, if you don't follow the recipe, you know.
Sorry.
It makes a difference if you don't put the two eggs instead of one.
That's a good point, Mike. A very good point.
So, yeah.
Now, while that may have been the end of the inexplicable deaths in TTS, 2018, a different Thai district was being terrorized in the same way. That's kind of eerie. Mm. 5 years after the fact, when it stopped happening here, all of a sudden mysterious deaths occurred in a nearby village in the same manner. Now, is this some very skilled serial killer out there, or something something otherworldly? I don't know.
Yeah, and had a few years between. If it was a serial killer, you could have had those 5 years where there's a break between, you know, devastating one village or whatever, and then this quiet period, and then he does this thing all over again. That's a theory.
Don't know. And you could be right, Mike. You absolutely could be right. Well, let's see. What time are we at? Do we have time for one more, or shall we wrap it up before we murder our listeners through no fault of our own, but...
Not through complete fault of our own. We suck.
And just to be serious, you know, I have to put that disclaimer out there. No, I'm not talking about literally murdering our listeners, okay? Because that's not a way to gain more listeners. I understand that. So we want to gain our YouTube subscribers. We want to gain our Patreon faithful. So, yes, if you listen to the Paranormally Zone, you will not be murdered. I just want to make that clear.
Right.
Is that a good thing?
Absolutely awesome.
Awesome. Well, Mike, let's wrap this up, okay? It's actually, believe it or not, I've enjoyed this quite a bit.
It's been a little painful for me, but
why are you sitting on just, a bag of tacks or something?
I'm chewing on some broken glass and it's getting stuck in the back of my throat.
Probably.
So anyway,
well Mike, thank you very much. This has been a blast. If you've made it this far, and you want to support the podcast, no better way than to give us a shot on our Patreon page. We're going to be recording the new episode immediately following the hang-up of this one. It'll be another
fun-filled episode. That.
Yeah, thanks for being excited, my friend. Thanks for being excited. It'll be over before you know it, my friend. It'll be over before you know it.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. We will be recording episode 71. My God. Patreon exclusive episode number 71. Already tonight. Nearing our 400th exclusive post on the Patreon page. We think it's worth it. Lots of cool stuff on there. Video, audio stuff. And give it a shot. No obligations. You don't like it? You can leave.
Dump it.
Well, Mike, I'll let you go, my friend. Thank you again. This has been a blast. Stick around. We're going to have a good discussion for the Patreon episode. And then you can go relax and have fun. Sound good?
I'm fine.
Oh my God, he's like miserable right now. Okay.
I'm fine.
Hold on, boys and girls. Well, you'll have to hold on quite a while because we won't be back for another 2 weeks. But check us out on the Patreon page. Mike, until then, what do our paranormal friends need to do?
Peace out.